climate shifts were probably responsible for the extinction of the mammoth and other species more than 10,000 years ago, not overhunting by humans, according to a new research. Radiocarbon dating of 600 bones of bison, moose, and humans that survived the mass extinction and remains of the mammoth and wild horse, which did not, suggests that humans were not responsible. You know, it's been quite a year for cryptozoology, and we're going to check in next with Lorne Coleman to talk about the search for many creatures on this planet. That in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Lorne Coleman has been a researcher, writer, investigating mysteries for more than 45 years. He's the leading researcher on the Bigfoot phenomenon and has written a new comprehensive study of its history, Bigfoot, the True Story of Apes in America. Coleman has put over 40 years of research into the book, which takes readers from the very first sightings of the creature up to the latest internet rumors and scientific studies. In the process, he introduces us to the fascinating world of cryptozoology, the study of hidden animals that is rapidly gaining popularity. We're going to talk about a lot of creatures on the planet, or the search for these creatures. Lorne Coleman, our guest. Hey, Lorne, how are you?
Great, George. It's good to be here and with all my friends out there in the radio land, too.
Likewise. Hey, by the way, the sketch you sent us that Lex has posted on the coasttocoastam.com website, absolutely, I mean, it's magnificent. It's, you know, if it's real, what could it be?
The Mawas, the Malaysian Bigfoot. Well, we've got something going on over there in Malaysia, and it's really been ongoing for really decades. But since last December, there's lots of reports out, and that artist, Peter Lau, from Singapore, has made that drawing based upon these photographs that we're hearing are now circulating around a confidential group of researchers, with Vincent Chow being the main researcher that I've been talking to over there. It's just fascinating. It looks like Homo erectus. It looks like something that could really shake up things.
Are you beginning to think that maybe, just maybe, it could be an actual Bigfoot?
I think we could really be close. I mean, I'm always extremely cautious.
Yes, you are. I know that. Yeah.
I'm very cautious, but we do have to let ourselves get excited once in a while. And, you know, based upon Vincent and some other people I'm talking to over there, I think they're really in the vortex of a discovery that could shake us all up and really let us be excited about this.
Lauren, what are they describing this creature like?
They're describing it as something that looks like what we think about Bigfoot is over here, but really much different, somewhere in the range of 8 feet tall, 10 feet tall, individual that shows lighter hair cover because of the tropical setting there. Females seem to be shorter and have breasts that are covered with hair with small heads, and then the juveniles 4 to 5 feet long. But the pronounced ridge across the eyebrow is certainly there. The colors seem to be a reddish-brown in adults, and they make guttural or low to high-pitched noises. They don't seem to be harmful to domestic animals or humans. And they're describing the arms and the feet as extremely strong and large. They obviously go around in the rainforest, so they're able to really negotiate some dense brush pretty much. Another thing that's interesting, because what Vincent is talking to me about is that there's 11 photographs of these creatures that have been taken. He's been shown three that he wants to include in a book that he's going to be writing in the next year, and I'll be writing the preface to. And he's describing faces that he said are wrinkled. He calls them handsome but wrinkled. They seem to have a face that he calls charismatic and really deep and intense stare, something that he says tells him that these are closer to humans than apes. But then again, the nostrils are more flared than the human nostril. They have double eyelids.
Almost gorilla-like?
Yeah, almost gorilla-like, yet that human-like face that seems to be there. And in some of these more ancient-looking Bigfoot-type creatures.
You've been quoted in some news articles lately. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, what's happening over there, of course, is that Vincent was at a news conference about something else, about the discussion of footprints that were recently found, and one of the individuals there and some of the other news people asked him about this book. And so it got out that there is actually a book coming out and that will have some of these publications in it. So these newspaper articles have been reporting, you know, both from Vincent Chow and myself, that that there could be photographs. But, of course, what has happened with the media, they've been saying things like the book's supposed to come out in June, and that's, of course, ridiculous. Or that, you know, now we're getting a lot of pressure, and you can see this on Crypto Mundo, from people that want to see the photographs right away. Well, why can't you release one photograph? And what Vincent is telling me is that he's very cautious. He's a very serious researcher, and he's not going to rush just to, you know, publication without really doing a lot of more field research for himself, as well as these photographs are only as good as the people that are taking them. So he's doing background checks on those individuals and really making sure that what he's going to produce and what we're going to really talk about is something that is truthful.
Lauren, are you confident that Vincent Chow is not like an individual who tried to convince people that he had a Bigfoot a few months ago?
Yeah, in his backyard or something. I think Vincent Chow, he's a man that's he's 59 years old. He's a well-known naturalist. He's Dr. Vincent Chow. He's associated with universities over there. He is the one that's being shown the photographs. He's the one that the individuals who are the local people over in Malaysia are releasing the photographs to. I don't see Vincent Chow either doing this for money. He's already a comfortable individual, doesn't need the money, doesn't need the fame. And he's mostly, well, from what I understand, very interested in the scientific discovery that this will be. But also Vincent, in private conversations with me, is extremely cautious like me and is not going to go overboard and jump off a cliff without having these pictures in hand and the ability to publish them. So he's not claiming, I'm not claiming that we have a Bigfoot in our closet or anything. So we're extremely cautious about this discovery.
Okay, but you had confidence in him.
I have confidence in him. I don't yet have confidence in the photographs because I haven't seen them. And until I talk to an eyewitness or the individual photographer, I won't have confidence in those photographs.
You know, in part of this, and I hope to God that they're authentic, Lauren, because I think the time has come for this planet to know that there's another creature out there. You know, they're discovering things everywhere. What they were just down in the ocean and they found more creatures. We're finding things on this planet that they never thought they would find before. Yet here with Bigfoot, Sasquatch stories, Yeti, we've been having for hundreds of years reports that there are these creatures. Remember the old abominable snowman? Something has got to be out there.
Oh, I definitely think, and if you look around the world, some of these rainforest areas that are incredible wildernesses, like over in Malaysia, and in fact, it's the lost world of Laos and Vietnam where we're finding a lot of these new animals. It's in the rainforest of New Guinea. Those are the areas where you're finding new frogs, new mammals, animals like that. So it would be reasonable that a new primate, something maybe, and I think what happens with the word Bigfoot or anything like that, the abominable snowman, it gets so blown out of proportion that I'm just as excited if they find a brand new ape. There's only a few species of apes around, and so if we're finding a new species of ape, a new hominid, that would be extremely exciting. It's just like the Flories, the little hobbits that were discovered. That's a remarkable discovery that we all can really be very happy with.
You bring a sense of calm. You bring a sense of sanity to these investigations. Yet I got to tell you, Lauren, I saw a Discovery show about a year ago about four older guys. They were all fighting with each other. I've seen what has happened on this program with people trying to get publicity about Bigfoot reports that apparently never turn out to be much. Why in this particular field, the search for Bigfoot, does it seem to be either so competitive or so vicious with people who are trying to find this creature?
Well, I think that my good friend John Green once said it, it takes such ego and such sort of stay with it power. You know, you're ridiculed all the time. I mean, I taught in universities for over 20 years, and even though I never would talk about aliens, I would come out of academic meetings in which people will say, oh, that guy over there in the corner, he's the guy that believes in the little green men. So you get this kind of ridicule. You get being made fun of all the time. So you get a real hard shell to yourself. And then if you get in the, if you can imagine having a room full of 20 guys like that with a couple females in it that are very strong-willed, you're going to have a bunch of people that you know, definitely agree and are all going in the same direction, but also tend to fight, tend to have little cat fights and dog fights, and that really does get in the way sometimes. But it also means that we're all pretty strong, and we get out of that room, and we're still looking for Bigfoot, and nobody can dissuade us from our passionate path.
Tomorrow on the program, I've got John Lear as a guest, and of course, one of the things he's known for is this incredible disclosure briefing about possibilities of if there were extraterrestrials and we knew about it, how would they tell us about it? And he told us in a 10-minute statement just what to expect, and it's pretty good radio. I'm going to play an excerpt of that tomorrow, Lorne. In your particular case, let's use you for a moment as the disclosure. Let's assume that you and your group or a group of scientists stumble across Bigfoot. Give me just kind of a feeling of what kind of an announcement would be made to the public, not only about the creature that has been found, but what does it mean for mankind? What does it mean for religion, for spirituality, if a Bigfoot is discovered? What would you say if they gave you the opportunity to tell the world?
Well, I think that the setting for an announcement like that would probably be academic, a university. So I'd start there. I think that in terms of anthropology, this will really shake up anthropology. You'll have a situation where all of a sudden anthropologists and zoologists who have been ignoring Bigfoot research will all of a sudden have to open up those files. They'll have to look in areas that they hadn't looked in before. They'll have to be more open-minded about that and look at the fact that we don't, you know, we don't exist on this earth by ourselves as probably the only hominids. The other part of it, the religious part, you're going to have a real debate going on in that field. Will the creationist, for instance, be correct? Is there a short-term span of that's going on? Or is, as I certainly believe, you know, evolution part of this? And we've had these Bigfoot around for a long time, and that seems to be more important. But for religion, I think it's going to certainly... Religion has always put humans on the top of the pile, and I think that if you all of a sudden notice that there's going to be something that's bipedal, upright, and looks like a human being, and maybe even thinks like a human being, perhaps has speech, perhaps has a little bit of culture, it's going to shake up religion, too.
Well, you know, they just reported that they believe now dolphins identify other dolphins by name. So, you know, there's Harry the dolphin and Irving and Tom. Dolphins whistle their names to each other.
Dolphins may telepathically communicate. Dolphins may commit suicide. There's all kinds of things that we as human beings really have to break out of our anthropomorphic realities and maybe look around and say, well, these other animals are doing some of these things too.
Do you believe that if Bigfoot then is found, your guess... more human than animal?
Well, I one of the reasons I wrote the Field Guide to Bigfoot and Other Mystery Primates is I think there's several different varieties that get under this label of Bigfoot, and I certainly feel that there are very human-like hominids that are close to human beings, and I think it goes all the way to there's some that are just a notch above gorillas. So I think we have many different kinds. I think that the one in Malaysia, however, from what Vincent is telling me, these are much more human-like, and we may have to really look at that reality.
Do you think that they would be pretty close to what cavemen might have been?
Well, I think that generally people say caveman and they think of Neanderthal.
Yes.
And I think that these are actually a little bit older and maybe survivors of Homo erectus, which came right in the few millennium before.
Before that.
Yeah. So we may have really pretty ancient, primitive, prehistoric, whatever adjective you want to use.
Why would they have survived, Lauren, and Neanderthal did not? Because, you know, they have said now that they believe that modern man and Neanderthals roam this planet. They may have been around at the same time. You know, so this evolutionary thought that we always believed occurred, maybe that's just not the case anymore. But
well, don't let the Russians hear you say that, because definitely if you're a Russian cryptozoologist, you think that the Neanderthals still may exist in some of the mountains around the edges of southern Russia.
Really?
Oh, yes, yes. So the Amas and other, quote-unquote Bigfoots may be surviving Neanderthals. The reason you have different pockets is really what we see with, we have megafauna in the United States that are really prehistoric survivors, the pronghorn, the moose. There's different mammals that are actually left over, and crocodiles have been around here since the Jurassic. So there are different animals that really are living fossil, and we don't have to, even go to the romantic coelacanth. We can look around at some rather normal animals like the okapi in the Congo, and those are left over from quote-unquote prehistoric times. So I don't see the Bigfoot or the Homo erectus survivals as much different than those. It's just that we haven't documented and verified them yet.
Hey, what's going on around Mount Hood in Oregon?
Well, Mount Hood, that's pretty interesting. On April 30th, there's some individuals that have forwarded, and we've got this up on your website, too, a remote camera view of what looks like, to some people, a Bigfoot that stumbled in front of a heat sensor motion detector remote camera that was in the Mount Hood National Park. And if you look at the pictures before and after that, you can see that this camera has been pretty active at picking up some deer. So this thing looks pretty hairy. It looks like it was pretty close to the camera. Of course, we have a lot of quick-witted crypto-mundo commentators who have said they think it looks like their wives, the back of their wives' head and stuff like that. But it has the look of something that's different colored than a deer, much more grayish, brownish. A lot of the motion that's picked up by these cameras, of course, is then seen in that. But it looks very almost groomed and very straight hair on this. Some people have said that it looks like the tail of a horse. You can see some bumps and other things going on around the edges that doesn't quite look like a horse either. So it's a pure mystery, and yet we're seeing from around the world, like with the civet over in Malaysia and Asia and different places like that, animals that are being captured on these remote sensor cameras that tend to get animals that are very, very shy.
The cameras only go on when something walks by it?
Right, or it's heat remote, too.
Interesting. It doesn't look like a bear, I'll tell you that.
No, it doesn't.
Stay with us. Lauren Coleman, our guest. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Complimentary After Dark double CD when you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter. The After Dark double CD, if you recall, was bumper music, phone calls, and some incredible ghost stories. It's a complimentary offer to you when you subscribe to After Dark. You just pay a nominal shipping and handling fee. Call 1-888-727-5505 online, coasttocoastam.com. They went out and picked up the remaining 2,000 CDs that were left, and they will go quickly. So take advantage of it. Get the newsletter, but you get the CDs for free. Had a chance to get up to the Cryptomundo website, Lauren, and taking a look at some of these pictures. It is strange. I mean, you tell me a little bit about how far into the wilderness the camera was put.
Well, not quite sure how far, but they're certainly around the national park. It's actually a place that has a Janie Tully is a kind of area that it's called. It has the name of a woman. So it's a well-known kind of associated with a camping area, but a little further on. As you can see from those pictures, there's deer that go through there quite a bit. The individuals had put wood around the camera so that they could make sure that the scent of the humans was kind of diminished. But there's a lot of blow through that go through, you know, the wind and the weather is pretty harsh through there. So it's not some place that people actually hang out.
Why was the camera set up in the first place?
It was set up to try to find Bigfoot.
Just for that, okay.
It's a well-known Bigfoot area. I have some questions about why it's only at 3 feet. I've been actually talking to the people about that, and they're putting more cameras back, and they've actually switched around from still photography to some video, and they're getting, as you can see, most recently, if you look deeper into that, we've got the full face of a deer has shown up just a few days ago. So they're getting still some wild.
Yeah, there he is looking right into the lens.
Exactly. For those people that have said it's just the face of a deer, I think it was interesting that right away, right after the beginning of May, we got a photograph of that. So it isn't the face of a deer. It's a much different animal, whatever this thing is.
What about tracks? When people went back out there, did they see anything?
Yeah, they looked for tracks. They looked. It's a spongy kind of underbrush, so they couldn't find tracks. They looked in 40 feet around the whole area, and they could find no tracks at all, and not even the tracks of the deer. So it's just an area that's not keeping tracks very well.
And how does the camera work exactly, Lauren?
It works the way they had it set up originally. When there was any kind of movement in front of it or any kind of intense heat source, then it takes a snapshot. So that's why you're getting deer. That's why sometimes people get leaves that move or, like a tree that might fall in front of it. It'll get a shot of that. But most of the time they're getting mostly deer, and then that's why they were very shocked to find that one on there, that Bigfoot-type creature.
How would you rate these photographs, the Mount Hood photos?
The Mount Hood photos, I think they're, 50-50, certainly reliable individuals as far as what they are. Is it a bear? Is it a person? Somebody has even suggested that it was the back of the head of the person setting up the camera, but I don't think it's something that foolish, but it's not, we don't have the face of a Bigfoot there. We don't have a foot of a Bigfoot. We don't have a hand. So I can't say it's really a Bigfoot yet. I'm hoping that if it's an active Bigfoot area like I know it is, and I actually put it in my Bigfoot book in 2003 as an active area. I've got a list at the back of the book of the hot spots around the country that people, should look for these creatures. So I know that there's a possibility there, but we don't have a signature photograph yet. It's not the Patterson film.
How would you rate this relatively young year for cryptozoology?
Oh, I'd say this is on a scale of 1 to 10, this is a 11.
Already?
I think I've never seen, and it's really started last October. I'm getting, media interest calls, 500 emails, it's just the level of interest and how, in France you can see a person's obituary and they're using the word cryptozoology. That didn't happen 10 years ago, and it didn't really happen 2 years ago. So I don't know what has happened since last October, but, the ivory-billed woodpecker, the hobbits being discovered, the giant squid being photographed, those are sort of the mundane animals that we all know about, and that's just opened the door to people talking about Bigfoot and abominable snowmen and Loch Ness Monster and other creatures all around the world that people are able to talk about in a new way, that these are just new animals that are going to be discovered. And then, of course, we're getting, like you and I had already mentioned, new frogs being discovered in New Guinea or a new mammal being discovered in Vietnam. You know, these kinds of things are happening routinely. This hybrid bear, for instance, that was shot.
That's a grizzly. Yeah, tell me about that. Grizzly polar hybrid.
Yeah, on April 16th, a man had gone up to the Northwest Territories with a hunting permit. I guess he actually paid $50,000 to go hunt for a polar bear, and he shot this bear, and it looked a little strange. And in fact, he and some of the guides and game wardens thought that maybe it was a grizzly polar bear hybrid. And he didn't have a permit to shoot a grizzly bear, so they quickly sent it off for a DNA test. And today, the results came back, and it has been confirmed that it is a grizzly and polar bear hybrid, the first one ever found in the wild. We know that they can breed in zoos under forced conditions, but this is the first time there's been a verified hybrid found out in the wild. And I guess the government bodies up in Canada have backed off a little, and they're not going to fine him and put him in jail. They're actually returning his hide of the bear that he shot.
They do allow licenses, though, to shoot these bear?
Oh, yeah. For some polar bear, there are some nuisance polar bears in some areas. They come into native Canadian villages and really can be quite troublesome, so they need to be called occasionally. The numbers of them need to be decreased. So that's why he was able to get one of these.
Heck, I heard that polar bears could be on the endangered species list if they aren't already.
Well, some of them are, but yet there are some areas where that there's a little bit too many of them. So
we're going to talk about a lot of things with you tonight, Lauren, the Thunderbirds, okay. These cat stories, lizard men and things like that. I mean, the list goes on and on. What's new in the arena of these chupacabras? You know, we saw these pictures last year of what looked like a weird dog with, no hair.
Right, and they were weird dogs with no hair. They were skinny little dogs and coyotes and foxes with mange. It looks like across the South, really from all the way from Texas to the Carolinas, there was a whole epidemic of mange. And so many of these dogs were showing up, and very excited newspaper men were calling them chupacabras. And yet they aren't chupacabras, they're just dogs. But there are chupacabras being seen mostly in Mexico and Puerto Rico, and some reports from Brazil of people seeing things that are really much different looking than dogs. They're usually 4 feet and bipedal. They're upright.
Almost like kangaroos?
Yeah, well, sort of like kangaroos with spiky
hair. A little more vicious, I guess.
Yeah. And so yet there are some good commercial, marketing individuals who are selling dog prints in Miami as chupacabra prints, so anybody can get those and buy those for $25 a pop.
Do you believe the chupacabra exists somewhere?
I consider the evidence for chupacabra not as good as Bigfoot, but certainly worth keeping an open mind about. Certainly from 1995 and looking backwards into the 70s, in Puerto Rico, there's lots of good sightings. There's lots of good evidence. And chupacabras, of course, means goat sucker, because they were killing so many goats and killing livestock. But it takes on almost metaphysical, ufological sort of tinge to it, because the early investigators have that bias. You didn't have cryptozoologists in Puerto Rico. You had some very good UFO researchers, and they were doing all of the investigation, so they naturally looked for in that direction, thinking that these chupacabras had jumped out of UFOs or something. I'm not sure. I think it's very mystifying what's going on, and yet, like Jennifer Lopez, we're all very interested in that.
I think it was Kevin Randall who had some incredible pictures and sketches of a being that could have been extraterrestrial. Looked like a little chupacabra hovering in the corner somewhere. Strange picture, Lauren.
Yeah. Well, there's been some strange pictures, and yet the problem, of course, with any pictures from the 90s and the 2000s is a good old Photoshop.
Yep, absolutely. You couldn't do that, though, about 30 years ago.
No, you couldn't. So that's why we like photographs and films from the 60s and 70s.
We continue to get cat story reports from around the country.
Exactly. And I think, certainly these mystery cats are popping up. Now we've got new reports coming today.
And how big are they, Lauren?
Out of Ohio. They're 5 to 6 feet long, 160 to 200 pounds. When they're being seen in central Ohio, for instance, the school's closed, the bus stops, you don't have kids waiting on the corner.
Well, they're taking this seriously then.
Oh, they're taking it extremely seriously. You have helicopters flying over, National Guard and state police looking for them. Mini safaris are taking place. And then, of course, when you have, as we did last week, reports of both a black panther and a cream-colored or tan-colored mountain-like creature being seen together near Andrews Air Force Base, then you have the federal government getting interested. That report and those sightings were taken very seriously by individuals there. And yet, once again, like most of these phantom cats, they disappeared after a couple days. The thing that's interesting about the new reports coming out today from central Ohio is that you've had routine sightings in that area since 2003. And as I've mentioned before here, we have reports from the 50s and 60s from Ohio of these mystery cats. And what I've noticed about coast to coast is a lot of colors. You know, we may be talking about Bigfoot, but then we get some colors, and they've seen some black panthers, and they're very frequently seen. And one of the most common and cryptozoological creature that does haunt America.
What do you think has happened here? Some cats might have been raised as small little cubs, and they got loose, or they got so big, these people turned them loose in the wild, and now they've bred?
I think that could be part of the answer. There are some individuals that, for instance, Oakland County, Michigan, has had reports of black leopards and black panthers for over 40 years, and people think that there's a small breeding population of black leopards that have been let go. But I think that there's also the possibility of another level of cryptozoology going on here, where we may have some cats that are really left over from the ice ages and just haven't quite been classified yet. Very intelligent cats. The American lion, it's called the Panthera atrox.
A species then we're really not familiar with?
A species that we only really know from the La Brea tar pits and from the fossil record. These were the cats that lived right alongside the saber-toothed tigers. And the saber-toothed tigers were not as intelligent. You'll find that there's many more saber-toothed tigers that got caught up in these tar pits. And what paleontologists have told us is that these American lions, these Panthera atrox, were more intelligent. They were social animals. Like African lions, and we're getting these reports of these animals being seen in groups in, one, two, and threes, and we may have something going on. And also, I've documented upwards of 20 different cases where people have seen lions with manes on them and tufts on their tails, just exactly what we would think from some of these prehistoric survivors.
Are they vicious, Lauren?
Definitely. Definitely aggressive.
They'd kill a person, I guess.
I think that I interviewed somebody in southern Illinois in the 60s who'd been attacked by one of these creatures and scratched up his chest, and he just, the only reason that he escaped was thanks to a trucker, one of the people that are listening right now. A trucker had gone by, saw this guy wrestling with this over the side of a road in southern Illinois, blasted his horn in his, and that scared the animal away, and that trucker pulled off later on, and they talked to each other, and I interviewed them both. And you know, that trucker had saved the guy's life.
What do you think the population might be?
I think it's very sparse and very rare, but they're also great animals to migrate and to range. A mystery cat can range 50, 100 miles in one night. So a very small population can be seen by many people, and then people think that there's more of them because they're reported from many communities. This happened a couple years ago all across the top of Ohio, where people were reporting over a sequence of days, and all of those communities thought they had their own separate cats, but I think it was just the same one moving across the state.
Beyond the episode you just mentioned, any other reports that people have been attacked or little children have been attacked? We know here in California, by the way, every once in a while they put out a warning about mountain lions coming down, grabbing kids or causing all kinds of mayhem. What about these animals?
Well, certainly the Black Forest of Pennsylvania in the 1840s through the 1860s saw many little children being attacked by these black panthers. We know more recently that these Black Panther-type creatures are the ones that are killing livestock. Over, 40 sheep killed in middle of Ohio in the 70s that I was able to track down the farmers who told me that they knew it was a Black Panther because they saw it. They had the teeth marks on the shed that the sheep were in, and they had the dead sheep that they could show me. So there's something that's been going on there, and it's certainly not in any zoological textbook yet.
In your history of this, has anybody caught one of these creatures?
Well, that's funny. Mark Hall, another researcher in the South now, and myself have talked and documented through different articles and eyewitness reports that people actually, three different cases that we know about, that's pretty well documented, of people killing them. But because of the endangered species laws, because of sort of nosy neighbors, people quickly bury these cats. They get rid of them because they think maybe after they've shot it, they've broken a law, because the animal looks like a cat, looks like a large cat, and maybe, maybe that there's something that they've done that they'll end up in federal prison for, and so they quickly get rid of the body.
Lauren, your websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com, but sometimes people are merely driving and they can't find the link the next day. What do you recommend for the websites?
Well, there's two. One, my daily blog at Cryptomundo, and that's CryptoMundo, cryptomundo.com. And then my name, LorenColeman.com, LorenColeman.
Are you glad you became a zoologist?
I'm certainly glad I became a cryptozoologist. I couldn't think of anything more adventurous to do in my life.
Well, stay with us because the adventures continue as we talk about a lake monster in Argentina. Those thunderbirds, those huge birds with 15 to 20-foot wingspans, maybe even bigger. And what about lizard men? I'm George Norrie. More to come on Coast to Coast AM.